It's election day, everyone.
Woohoo!
At least here in the United States, which is the only country that matters.
Isn't it the only country that exists?
I mean, I've heard of other countries.
I have.
And I have no way of knowing that when I thought I was in Ireland, maybe I just flew to like an island just off of the United States that was still part of the United States.
Yeah.
How would I
know? It's kind of the way Trump wants to buy Greenland from Denmark.
It's so funny, like the silver lining of the Trump presidency. In 50 years, kids, if assuming they're still in America and they're still kids and there's still school books and still schools, they will be entertained in the section that talks about 2020 and Trump's administration.
That's true. It's true.
Silver lining. Just to introduce ourselves, I'm Mark Van Steenwyck. I'm the director for the Center for Prophetic Imagination.
And I'm Daniel Wolpert. I direct MICA, the Minnesota Institute of Contemplation and Healing. And yeah, I mean, this is the day that we've been waiting for, focused on. Minneapolis is in flames as we speak, right? No, it's not. Everything's fine. It's really mellow outside this morning.
For now.
Yep.
That's like that. And that's the conservative fear dream is car accidents and Target burning in flames. As Bernie Sanders and AOC lead the socialist hordes to power.
Yes. So Bernie Sanders with a burning tire around his neck as he marches into battle.
But it doesn't burn him. It just makes him more powerful. And he becomes.
Right. No, exactly.
God. Demon, archfiend.
Yeah.
Taking away their freedoms one at a time.
The whole thing is so ridiculous.
Yeah. And so we're in light of that. And this actually does connect. We're talking about minority rule because here's the thing.
Yes.
Anytime you start talking about anything that's very democratic, and I'm talking about where everybody has a say, conservatives, they whip out the old nugget. You know what, though? We don't live in a democracy. We live in a republic. And that's just a coded way of saying the majority shouldn't rule. The minority should. And I'm not going to say who, but we know who the minority is.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, a little history lesson. You know, when America started out, of course, not everybody could vote. And not everybody could vote. And so the only people that could vote were white men who owned property. So it was a very small percentage of the population. And of course, many of the founding fathers thought that black people were not really even people. Women, of course, were not really people. And if you were a white slave, and there were white slaves originally, you also did not have any rights to vote. So, yeah, it starts out, there's this very small group of people that can vote, and it's in these 13 colonies. And yeah, and they come up with this system, which actually is largely derived from the Presbyterian Church. So you can blame the Presbyterian Church.
Yet another thing to cast at the feet of Presbyterians, along with
Trump's
religious affiliation.
No, he's changed now.
Oh, that's right. He's non-denominational now.
He's non-denominational. Yeah. Yeah,
but I could still blame Presbyterians a little.
They sure.
Had the most chance to stop is to like appeal to his
conviction. And they failed. And so they set up this system, which from their point of view is this whole sort of balance between the states and the relative populations and all of that. And at the time, of course, the majority of the population was rural. 90%+ of people lived on farms and small farms. And by the way, in those days, right, like a farm was an acre, a couple acres. There was some urbanization, but not a whole lot, very small percentage of the population. And what population there was pretty equally distributed across the geography of America. And that was true in most places in Europe, right? So that the countryside was full of people and population was pretty evenly distributed. And so the system that they set up from their point of view, there was a real balance between the demographics and the geography was balanced out.
Yeah, so like if Virginia has like 10 times the size of the smallest other colony, if they had more senators or more representatives, it was okay because they had 10 times the population. So this idea, right. Even like if you start thinking about how the Senate is disproportionate now because everyone gets two, mm-hmm. It wasn't as egregious when they framed the Constitution.
Yeah.
Still had a sense of egalitarianism if you're applying it to at least who they defined as full people.
Right. And so for, the vast majority of our time in America, when you have a national election, the person that wins the Electoral College also wins the popular vote, because there is this reasonable distribution. Now, the problem is, as the 20th century progresses, all of this distribution thing starts to break down, right? And so you have this massive depopulation of the rural countryside. Mm-hmm. And so in Northwest Minnesota, where I lived for a long time, up until the mid-20th century, the average farm size was 80 acres. And so you would have on what was called a square of land, which was a square mile, you would have four farms on that square. And so there were a lot of people around. There were a lot of people in the countryside. And now, though, in the various waves of farm bankruptcies and consolidation and kind of the collapse of the rural economy, the average farm size in that part of the world is now 1,000 acres. And so, you have depopulated the countryside. And so beginning in 2000, we have now had 50% of our presidential elections. The person that has won the Electoral College has lost the popular vote. And if Trump wins today, I think that will happen again. I think it's very clear that he's going to lose the popular vote today. I don't think really there's no doubt in my mind about that. But he still may win the Electoral College, depending on the distribution of that popular vote. And so that would mean that three out of the last five presidential elections, we've now had somebody who has lost the popular national vote but gets elected president. And so that's what we want to talk about today, because I think that is not going to be sustainable. People are going to be pissed off, basically.
Yeah. So in a way, the framers of the Constitution were against the idea of minority rule. If we're talking about how they thought of what they thought of as the populace, they were very populist in a way. With, again, like there still was functional minority rule because it's white men. But the way they set it up was the idea that somehow republic would it be seen as at odds with the idea of republic, representative democracy would have been strange to them, because they used the term almost interchangeably. Yeah. Listen to speeches up and through Lincoln, representative democracy and republic were used interchangeably. They were against pure democracy. And they wanted instead representative democracy. So like even that idea that somehow this little like, oh, we don't have a democracy, we have a republic, as a way of justifying minority rule, justifying the way the Electoral College works, justifying gerrymandering, justifying voter suppression, justifying limiting the path to citizenship, is even that the framers would be upset at how we enfranchised everybody. But when we started talking about this part, they'd be like, what the heck are you talking about?
Right.
So it's bizarre that that's where we're at, and we know what's underneath it. people want to keep their power.
Right.
So that's, yeah.
We got some comments here coming in. First of all, good morning to Kathleen and Susan.
Yeah, and Susan promises us a good time by saying anarchist tomorrow. Anarchy tomorrow. Like I hope so in the best sense of that word, but not in the worst right. sense of that word.
No.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens tomorrow.
Yes, it will. For sure. And the next day, and the next day.
Yeah. I mean, this is the thing. This is the other weird part of our system. Like, we all get into this, like, oh, yeah, elections tomorrow and everything's going to change. Wait, no, it doesn't kick until January. So we still, no matter what happens, there's 2 months where we're, like, waiting for what comes next if we elect Biden. Or if all the people who wrote in my name get their way. Luck George says, praise the Lord from Hyderabad, India. Greetings from across the globe.
Hyderabad, yes, yes. Oh, and Sirius, you skipped Sirius.
Oh, sorry, Sirius. The only time the far right want majority rule is if it serves them and their agenda.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty accurate.
Yeah, and so, you know, what Sirius is getting to and pointing out is that, uh-oh, I've frozen. No, I'm back.
We can still hear you.
So, so really, you know, the GOP has been very aware of this trend for, you know, 50 or 60 years now. And in the 1960s, a number of people in the party began to very consciously voice a strategy of minority rule via voter suppression. And also, but not just that, also the monopolization of this huge swath of the middle of the country that, you know, has hardly any people in it. But when you add it up, it is a very significant electoral power, both in terms of the Senate and also in terms of electoral votes. And so this is something that, you know, the GOP has really been looking at for a long time and has realized, right. I mean, if you take, you know, the number of senators in the big chunk of the Mountain West and add up the population that they represent, you've got like, you know, 14, 16, 18 senators that represent fewer people than are in Los Angeles. Now, this is something that the framers of the Constitution could never have imagined. I mean, the idea of a super city was not something that was big on the radar in the 18th century. And so, you know, this is something that I think we have to look at very seriously and figure out how to engage.
Kathleen writes, I was in Jamaica during the Bush-Gore election. They wanted to know why the person with the most votes didn't win. Additionally, in the Missouri governor's race, the winner was the only one who had died in a plane crash, was the one who had died in a plane crash a few weeks earlier.
Yeah. Missouri is just, it's just the place of interesting stories.
Indeed. Scott writes, they feared the unruly mob.
Right.
Yeah. Adam writes, don't get carried away with democracy now. Let's go with representative democracy. Indeed, that was right. the idea. Yeah. Good morning to everyone who is Kathleen or Susan.
Yeah.
Well, we say good morning to them because they leave comments saying good morning. Yes. So we'll say good morning back to whoever says good morning.
Says good morning. So good morning, Adam.
Good morning, Adam. Adam writes, you can't trust the people with democracy. No.
Yeah, and you know what Adam's pointing to here is that there definitely was in the framers this real tension based on the various philosophies about human nature that were popular at the time. There was this real tension between, on the one hand, wanting some level of representation by the people. Mm-hmm. However you defined the people, and that of course has been the big issue for 250 years is trying to decide who the people are. So wanting to have some of that, but at the same time, yeah, mistrusting, you know, all of those sort of grubby, dirty peasant types, who, you know, uneducated, right? And this is something we've talked about a lot. Mark, you talk about a lot. You know, there still is that, right? There is such a thing as the urban elite that don't trust those people that, you know, live in a trailer somewhere in the middle of nowhere and have crap on their lawn. I mean, there's that attitude is still out there. Yeah, and so right. So the representative democracy was meant to bridge that tension. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, if you had told the framers, like, the person who ends up in the presidency is not going to get the most votes, they would not have been in favor of that. I mean, there's nothing in their writing that indicates they would have thought that was a good idea.
That's right. So are we going to talk about how many states, blue states, don't allow felons to vote or put up roadblocks to felons voting? There are only two states, Vermont and Maine, that allow folks in prison to vote. That's a huge form of voter suppression of disproportionately indigenous black people of color. The thing is, I mean, yeah, that's like, it's interesting talking about this. It reveals the logic. Mm-hmm. You know, I hear people say all the time, like, oh, I don't like Republicans because they believe some people are less human, like that kind of way of thinking. And that's actually functionally true, but I've never met a conservative who actually thinks people who aren't white are less human. What they do is they'll say different people are less worthy of voting. And they might think in their brain, like, that's not the same thing, but we know functionally it plays out the same way. So there's whole categories of people who don't deserve to vote.
Right.
Who shouldn't have a say because they've tainted they lack merit. And this is one of those areas.
Yeah. Yeah, and to me, this is one of the most unjust and sort of bizarre things, what you're bringing up, Gus. I mean, my understanding of the whole way that our justice system is set up is that when you have served your time, your slate should be wiped clean. But there are all these ways that we then do not do that. And, you know, Minnesota is a great example. I mean, Minnesota, felons, a person with a felony on their record cannot vote. And it's about 45,000 people. And right, I mean, here we are, this great Democratic state, you know, been majority Democrat in all kinds of ways forever. And that is still a very real problem. And so we have this inherent tension around, who is worthy, who is allowed to vote, and who constitutes we the people.
And this is the thing, like, this isn't just a conservative problem. I remember when there was, like, you see these pictures of, like, some Bubba somewhere holding up a sign with his word spelled wrong. See that all the time. And I've seen Democrats say people, before they should vote, they should have to pass a writing test, not knowing that that has been a thing to disenfranchise black people. Like, this is why those things existed. And they're just saying, well, maybe it should exist for Bubbas. And if Bubbas aren't, I'm okay with us naming enemies, but let's aim a little higher if we're going to start naming people as enemies. I'm okay with Jeff Bezos losing his right to vote. Why not? But that's the way we should go. And the way we should limit his right to vote is by not letting him buy political power. Let's start with that.
Right. Yeah. No.
Scott writes, Adam writes, it's almost as if we had decent, consistent education, we could trust the people in the trailer park.
Yeah.
Scott writes, even that semi-populist sentiment is complex, though. As Gerald Horn has argued, much of the anti-British freedom talk was about Britain's attempt to restrict slavery and further settlement. Indeed. Yeah. David writes, love the musical, but I believe Alexander Hamilton believed that democracy needed to be limited in order to make the country more attractive for investors. That seems like something Alexander Hamilton would do.
Yeah. So I actually didn't love the musical.
I have not seen it. I've only ever heard music from it from people in karaoke.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe I need to watch and we can have a whole episode where we...
Yeah, I mean, it's okay. Music was pretty good, but...
Sarah's writes, I find it hilarious that the GOP branded themselves as being for rural populations when historically a lot of them, along with Democrats, treat them like shit. Jon Stewart's film Irresistible displayed this when a GOP PR manager was on a phone with someone talking crap about people in her hometown, which is a rural town.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, what's great about all these comments is that we're seeing all of the very weird ways that we parcel out this sense of, you know, who is right, who is allowed to vote, who is worthy to vote. Which, of course, also brings up the whole phenomenon of technology and the fact that, you know, these elections are such total clusterfucks. I mean, which, you know, I hope we understand how ridiculous that is, right? I made the comment the other day, yesterday on Facebook. Like, I mean, we have these computer systems that can enact billions of stock transactions every nanosecond, right? And in fact, they're so good that they had to increase the number of nanoseconds before you could make a new transaction. Because it was like, well, you know, if you only own the stock for a tenth of a nanosecond, you don't really own it. So you have to own it for at least a nanosecond before you sell it. Now, if we can create that level of technology, the fact that we can't process 150 million votes pretty much instantly and have some system to do that. I mean, of course we should be able to do that. It's ridiculous, right? I mean, Amazon probably processes 150 million transactions in like every 10 minutes or something.
And when it comes to their money, it's amazing how rare it is for, I don't know, maybe it's happened where someone's hacked the stock exchange, but you don't hear about that.
No.
And I bet you if there's hackers attacking anything, it's going to be that. So they are able to figure out how to secure it because... Yeah. It's in their best interest, but voting is not in the best interest of the public.
And it's not just the stock exchange, right? I mean, how many people have their banking app on their phone now? How many people, you know, do only online banking, right? I mean, there are millions and millions, hundreds of millions, billions of banking transactions every single day. I talked to somebody that was one of the lead designers on the computer systems for Citibank. Their computer system, and this is mind-blowing to me, 75% of all the monetary transactions in the world go through their computer system every single day. Now, you're telling me we can build that and we can't figure out how to count, you know, 100,000 votes in Florida? It's like, give me a break. I mean, of course we should be able to do this. And it should be very easy. And so the fact that it is not, and the fact that there is this constant pressure for this ongoing minority rule is very much a vestige of, you know, this white supremacist attitude that is trying to maintain a certain amount of power in the country.
Adam writes, we're showing our hand when we deny rights to the incarcerated or even the formerly incarcerated. It isn't designed or even intended to be rehabilitative. That's right. It's punitive. Yep. And in a fraudulent meritocracy, because we don't even have that. We have a pantomime of a meritocracy. Anything punitive can take away your right to have a say in our society.
Yeah.
Some more comments coming in. Kathleen writes, I voted weeks ago, but I felt like my vote for Biden didn't count because no one on the planet thinks Missouri will vote Democratic, only Kansas City and St. Louis.
Yeah. You know, and this brings up a really interesting thing. And we have this in Minneapolis. And I heard this great story on this the other day, which is that one idea for updating this whole system is to begin to institute ranked choice voting. Which for those of you who are not aware of what that is, basically when you go and vote, you don't just vote for one person and then it's winner take all. You actually rank all as many of the candidates on the ballot as you want. So if there are 30 candidates on the ballot, you get to vote 30 times and you get to rank all those people. Mm-hmm. And then when the results are calculated, you don't just take into account the number one vote and the person that gets the most wins. You go through a series of iterative processes, and the people who get the least a number of votes keep getting bumped off, right? So if you have those 30 candidates, you know, the bottom 10 might get bumped off in the first round. But then what happens is that all of the second and third and fourth choice votes start getting allocated to the people who are still in. Mm-hmm. And so by the end, what happens is that the person that loses in the first choice voting may actually win because they get more second, third, fourth, fifth choice, et cetera, votes. And that system, and it, you know, it's got issues too, but it really gets to this point that Kathleen is talking about, because it very much allows people who are in a geographic area where their first choice is always going to lose, it actually gives them a possibility of their first choice person winning. If they can get candidates who would be attractive as a second and third choice vote for people.
Dorinda writes, Jefferson, with all his faults, championed public education so that we would have educated voters. In his time, the literacy rate was very high, and everyone, especially male, voiced input in the adopting of the Constitution. Of course, not all were heard, but they felt they had voice.
Yeah, I mean, a very low percentage of the people actually had any voice into the Constitution. But yeah, I mean, the notion of a more and more educated public being a better and better thing for democracy is a pretty longstanding idea in our country. And, you know, we can sort of argue about that, whether or not one agrees with that or not. But I do think there's a lot to that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, this is one of the real problems that we're seeing right now with what can go on in social media, is this question of, you know, is the internet helpful or harmful in terms of education? And I think the vote is out on that.
Well, and if you think, I remember in high school taking civics class, and I was politically minded, so I've stayed kind of informed. So even though I was conservative at one point, my views have shifted because I stay engaged. Nowadays, like, because the way I engage was just to pay attention or read. But now you watch a channel that's suited for your political tastes, so it's an echo chamber. I mean, and social media has its algorithms keeping us in an echo chamber. That's not good. I don't want to oversell that. Like, I don't think that somehow having proper education will fix everything, but it's definitely a component.
No.
Scott writes, spot on analysis. Appreciate you guys. Thank you, Scott.
Thank you.
I don't know what the context for this is anymore, but we in quotes.
Yeah. Then we the people, maybe.
Yeah. Educated white male voters with class mobility. It's the American dream, Adam. CK writes, look, if you can have millions of people vote for America's Got Talent, but can't figure out democracy, you're fucked.
Yeah.
Eloquently put.
No, exactly. I mean, I do feel that this is, you know, and this is sort of boring advocacy, and this is something that a lot of people, political activists, talk about, that much political work is boring and sort of drudgery. Like, it's not these awesome, you know, highfalutin ideals. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of really boring stuff. This to me is one example of that. I mean, we should be able to vote easily and instantly from our homes, and we should have the results in 10 minutes. I mean, there's just no question about that in my mind. And I think this is something that we need to really start pushing and advocating for. And all this stuff about cheating and fraud, and we can't validate it, it's all complete bullshit. And again, anytime somebody says that, I'm just going to come back to the banking system. I mean, you know, you all are banking online, and you don't think that there's 20 other people spending money out of your account. We have the technology, and I think we need to really advocate for that.
Yep. Gus writes, can you imagine what an amazing voting block incarcerated folks or unhoused folks could be? I think it'd be great. And to me, this is the thing. Like, those are the people I want having a lot of say. I mean, that's part of the mentality too, is there's reasons why certain folks don't want these people in particular having a say. And it says a lot about what they value about the world and who they think is most worthy.
Yeah.
It's people, powerful white people. Catherine writes, being officially educated or literate is not a sign of intelligence or ability to make thoughtful political decisions. Poor people potentially have a sharper political analysis than comfortable or rich people who aren't feeling the effects of corruption as directly.
Yeah,
I agree. I mean,
absolutely.
That applies to voting and also spirituality. It's one of the great benefits of liberation theology is realizing it's not just that we have to condescendingly say, oh, incarcerated person, you get a vote. It's saying, maybe you understand some things that I don't, and you need to have a say in a way that's very important toward democracy. So good point, Catherine. Susan writes, public education is geared towards producing obedient citizens. I read John Holt when I was considering homeschooling. There's a lot, that's a whole series of topics, because I agree. There's Ivan Illich, bell hooks, all kinds of educators, Paulo Freire, push back on this idea a lot, and it's a good point, Susan. Series writes, we need an episode on media at some point.
Great, let's do it.
Could put that in the books. Adam, well, someone sure can. You're making these comments, but it's like I'm getting them after the fact.
Yes.
What is Adam pointing to?
Adam is engaged in a sophisticated stream of consciousness.
Yeah, fourth dimensional chess. Catherine writes, a Halloween clarification. Ranked choice voting does not involve bumping candidates off, just off the potential winners.
Ooh, and Catherine comes in with a pun at exactly 10:30.
Nice.
Awesome.
Last few comments, and then we'll see y'all next time. Word, we need to reimagine what education is and can be. And I know you're all about that. Kathleen writes, I keep hearing white pastors say God doesn't care who we vote for. You know, we could say a lot about white pastors and their problems. The problem of white pastors could be a whole other. We're coming up with lots of conversation topics. Susan writes, now of my two children, my daughter voted early and my son is apathetic about American politics. I'm not sure my 50% success rate makes me feel great.
Well, we could talk more about that too.
Adam writes, education as it stands is nothing more than socialization. Lots of great comments and thoughts today, folks. And
I'm feeling like we need to have one about education. There's so much rich stuff here and so many different angles. That would be good. So we will be back tomorrow if the internet and electricity and all that stuff still exists.
Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah, we'll see. All right. Okay. Thanks, everybody. We really appreciate you. Mm-hmm.
See you next time.